Welcome back to Sunday Sports Cafe. It's 10:27 the time here on what's a beautiful Sunday morning in Perth, Western Australia. With us on the line is our cricketing writer from theraw.com.au, Dem Panopoulos. Dem, good morning to you.
Morning, Peter. How are you?
Wonderful, thanks, mate. How'd you pull up after your cricket yesterday?
Yes, not too bad. Great weather yesterday in Melbourne, nice 30-degree day, and followed up by today being about 17, so so it's one for the body.
Excellent. Did you bat or bowl?
Both, unfortunately. Not great when it gets to that point, but right, yeah. We did both. So.
Yeah, oh, well, how about Matthew Renshaw? Just a quiet 345.
It was quite unbelievable to see around... you know, being around at our cricket club, we had a historical day with a 15-year-old making a double century. And then you log Facebook with 345 from about 270 deliveries.
Yeah, Renshaw, yeah, 38 boundaries, which included a dozen sixes. Not a bad effort.
Yeah, no, it's certainly interesting to see the fact that he goes down to great cricket and is so far better than everyone else.
Yeah.
I think he's got three centuries in the three games he's played. So it's interesting, but... we're talking about a guy that's averaging 20 in his, is it, 8 or 9 innings at the moment at Sheffield Shield level. So, you know, you take it with a grain of salt that, yes, he dominates. And that's an outstanding performance. However, we still need to see it at Shield level before he can truly be seen as an Australian option.
Oh, yeah, no question. And it'd be interesting to get Google Maps out and have a look at what Oxenham Park looks like too.
Yeah, absolutely. There's every chance to post stamp with a 345 at about 120 strike rate, but no credit to him, and hopefully he can carry some form into the next Shield game on Friday.
Yeah, for the sake of the budget for that local club and their balls, hopefully they're not located alongside a river.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so as much as it's heating up on the field, off the field, what do you make of this? Jared Waitley, I suppose, fired the first shot. Waitley versus Michael Clarke furore.
Yes, certainly interesting. I think, so it all stemmed from Michael Clarke saying that Australia has to get back to sort of the aggressive play-to-win way that they played, 5 years ago when he was in charge?
Yep.
And I think Michael Clarke does have a fair point. Now, I like Michael Clarke.
Yep.
But there have been, you know, there's been multiple parties saying that the culture under him was toxic, is what some people have said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, quite aggressive nature, playing within the rules, but that towing the line of what's right and what's wrong. Now, obviously, Jared Waitley went all in on him during the week.
Yep.
And I think a journalist has every right to question these sorts of things if they've heard, whether it's rumours or whether it's, you know, fact itself.
Mm-hmm.
I do think maybe to draw the comparison, you know, that the aggression back then may have led to, you know, the current environment where who knows what's the right thing, whether win at all costs genuinely means bending the rules.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was quite right. But then Michael Clarke, as you saw on Twitter, his response. And I always think when a sports star wraps up their argument with a journalist isn't courageous enough or, you know, good enough to be on the field themselves so they can't say anything, I always think that probably lessens their argument, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up fantastically, Dem. You think very, very similar to myself. I think Waitley went a bit too hard, possibly, but I thought Clarke was silly when he went that defence. But they're both grown men. They can both have a crack at each other. It's okay. I think the untold story here is that Simon Kattich works with Waitley. They'll be broadcasting the test coming up together on SEN. I think there's a lot there in that little click.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we all know what the history between Simon Kattich and Michael Clarke is. So, you know, whether you take these things with a grain of salt, it certainly took the headlines for this week, which I guess brings eyes onto the product itself with the test match starting this week. You know, it'll be interesting to see how Australia approaches it. But in terms of, you know, whether it's a genuine heated rivalry between the two parties, Kattich and Clarke, probably Waitley and Clarke, we'll see. They'll probably kiss and make up at some stage. They'll meet each other. They'll talk it through. But I don't think there's anything wrong with Michael Clarke suggesting that Australia should be, you know, more aggressive in the way they're playing. Yeah, you could argue that Australia's being a little passive at the moment, going through the motions a bit, and that stems from team selection as well. So it'll be interesting to see how Australia approach this test series.
Yeah, I agree. I think Australia could have should get a little bit more aggression going. You know, it's called controlled aggression, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But the person who deserved the high, I think the headlines, and really didn't get it, in my eyes, is Nathan Lyon.
Yeah, Nathan Lyon was really good, wasn't he? I think he's one of those guys that, you know, you can tell, like Renshaw playing grade cricket, where they're a class above. Nathan Lyon is a class above. You know, he led New South Wales really to the win.
Yep.
Over WA. You know, 7 wickets for the match, just really, really smart bowling. And that's what you've come to expect from Lyon. You know, he started his career as, you know, sort of, you don't want to say gifted games, but as we've said previously, he got to work into the role. He got to learn how to master his craft within the first 20 and 25 tests. So right now, he's the best spinner in Australia. And while he deserves the headlines, you expect this sort of thing from Nathan Lyon.
Yep. Well, he's not the first bloke to have been given a baggy green on potential and will back you in for a while, but there ain't many who've lasted. You know, learning on the job's bloody tough at that level.
Absolutely, with all the eyes on you and, you know. But then you've got the resources. You've got, you know,
yes,
we've
true.
Got some of the best coaches in the world and, you know, and obviously Shane Warne always in and around the area. So it's really good. But Nathan Lyon was really the standout performer. Of course, in that same game, we had Jai Richardson in the first innings with 8 wickets.
Yep.
You know, that's that potential we spoke about last week. You know, he's someone that was in the test squad previously just to get some experience around, you know, travelling and all that sort of thing. So it wouldn't surprise to see him back in the international picture this summer in limited overs cricket. But yeah, I think that was a really, really interesting match for Australia, given the amount of players playing. You know, you've got the Marsh brothers, and, you know, Shaw Marsh, it's that classic, once he gets past 10, he'll get a score, which he did in the first innings, and then he made a duck in the second innings. So, you know, and Mitch Marsh was average, but you'd think he'll still play. So
he's pretty good with the ball, to be fair.
And, you know, he's got to do that. Yep. Both, you know, he's picked as an all-rounder, so they both should be in the team. They're in the best 11 for Australia at the moment, so, you know, but that was an entertaining match to watch.
Yeah, no, it was an entertaining match. The New South Wales team, they stay in the hotel right next door to, well, near the cafe I go every morning. They were there first thing every morning, pretty confident all the way through, and they handled themselves pretty well, to be fair.
Yeah, no, it goes a lot to say about sort of a team culture, team bonding, and, you know, away trips are usually, you know, that they bring everyone close together. But, I mean, the Sheffield Shield last week was pretty interesting because, you know, Australia's looking for batsmen to step up, and not many batsmen did.
Mm. Well, so, Peter Hanscom did. He's sort of a fly in the ointment at the minute, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about Hanscom versus Head for that potential spot, and it was interesting. So Hanscom's got the 80 and the 53.
Yep.
And then you've got Marcus Harris at the top of the order who failed in the first innings, but still got a 62 in the second. And then you've got Travis Head who got 49, but then he ended up getting 2 wickets with the ball. So it really, Hanscom's performances throw a spanner in the works. I still think they might go towards Travis Head because of that bowling ability, especially at his home ground, I guess. So it's interesting, but Hanscom certainly put a good case for himself.
Absolutely. And what's this? Well, in today's media, there's a lot of talk about the number of left-handers and how prone they could be to the Indian spinner.
Yeah, you have to take these things with a grain of salt because Australia, how many times has a pitch in Australia really been a turning wicket?
Yep.
You've got, you know, Adelaide's always in the Big Bash. South Australia's quite, you know, quite known for being able to play a leg spinner there and they dominate. But in terms of a left-hander versus India, Ravi Ashwin doesn't really turn the ball much. So while the left-handy the left-handed issue versus an off-spinner does, you know, is a thing that we have to be cognizant of. Ravi Ashwin doesn't spin the ball much, and then you've got Jadeja, if he gets a game for India, you know, he's in the best 11, but whether he can actually play in Australian conditions is interesting, but he spins the ball into them. So I like the fact there's more left-handers in the team, and, you know, it forces field changes. It might get in the head of the Indian team. So that could be a positive for Travis Head, actually, you know, come to think of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... Well, you can't argue. Hanscom did what he had to do. That's the way I see it. You
know, yeah,
he's put the ball right back in the selectors' court. I think going for Harris is the fact that Langer went so hard for him last week to try and say that they'd mended a lot of fences. You'd almost, if you left him out now, that would almost look a bit, puerile almost.
Well, yeah, it'd be funny. It would, you know, I mean, there's a big cricketing headline off the field every week, and, you know, obviously Marcus Harris was that one last week. But you'd think, I mean, he got 62 off 80 in the second inning.
Yeah, that's
in
Victoria. Right.
So,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, he's still in the same form from when he got picked.
Mm.
I think Hanscom's the only one that's really elevated his status within the squad. We were questioning whether he deserved to be in the squad, averaging 35, 36, but he showed that he's pure class. So, I mean, I don't think Australia's any worse off if they pick him over Travis Head.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think, you know, maybe that all-round option might be a bit better.
Yeah. And other notable JLT performances that's caught your eye?
Well, I think one I've said a couple of times in our chats recently has been Joe Byrne.
Yes.
And he got 96 and then 24 not out against the Victorian.
Yeah.
And he's one that is hitting that form. He's only getting better and better. And he's one that is someone we need to watch for, because I think he's ahead of Renshaw in the opening order, you know, the rankings at the moment.
Yep.
I think, yeah, Joe Byrne's definitely. Tim Payne just went through the motions. He was, you know, I guess he was the biggest name, obviously, so he was one of the big names to just play and be solid. 47-98 in the second innings was interesting. Aaron Finch didn't really do much, which is maybe a slight concern, but I think overall the Sheffield Shield didn't do a heap for the batsmen with, you know, not many scores over 300 in any innings in any match. So
yeah,
it was certainly interesting. But I think one that we should just touch on quickly, I guess, is the CA 11 versus India.
Yep.
You know, because the only thing that comes from that match is whether the Indian bowlers changed their mindset about playing in Australian conditions. They've been hit for 544 against, you know, the Cricket Australia 11, which, you know, isn't made up of the best players.
No.
So whether that affects them, you know, they're one of the best teams in the world, so it's not, isn't a huge concern. But I think the fact that the bottom four combined for nearly, you know, 170 runs for the CA 11 certainly brings up some question marks about the finishing ability of India, albeit a very, very small one.
Yeah, or how hard they were actually going. I mean, that's the other thing to consider, I suppose. Were they just bowling for condition, or were they bowling to take wickets? I think the JLT, the interesting thing to me was the guys that had been playing T20s and one days, white ball cricket, generally handled the conditions reasonably well, you know, given that they've got to get used to the red ball. And and the guys that kind of made the scores were the ones that had been playing red ball for a couple of weeks in succession, as you would kind of expect. So I think it was a very important round of cricket for the Australian team. Hopefully they can carry that forward to next weekend.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. And what do you think in the prelude to the test?
What
are you looking forward to see, other than Kohli?
Well, it's interesting. Australia's chances of, you know, increased exponentially with Prithvi Shaw rolling his ankle and being ruled out of the first test.
True.
And I think, you know, he's only played three or four test matches, I think, and he's already a superstar. So him being out really gives Australia an edge. I think it might hurt the confidence of India, because who do they go with opening the batting? They've got, I think they probably go with Vijay and Rahul.
Yeah.
And, but both have had, you know, confidence issues in the past. Both have had, you know, up and down form. And, you know, there's quality there. But I think it just puts a slight question mark possibly makes them susceptible at the top of the order. The other ones are, I'm interested to see India's team selection surrounding, as I said before, Jadeja.
Yep.
He's definitely in the best 11, but that might mean that, you know, Ashwin bats at 7, Jadeja at 8. Can you carry two spinners into a test match in Australia? That's a big question. I think Ashwin tends to bowl less when Jadeja's picked, so I think that's interesting. But for Australia, you know, it is about playing slightly more aggressive. So I guess Michael Clarke's right in that aspect. They got to go a little bit more at the Indians, especially if the Indian 11, like Kohli said, are going to lay off a little bit in terms of the verbal attacks about, you know, the sandpaper stuff and all that. So it's in a really interesting spot, I think, for the first test.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe Kohli totally. Call me old-fashioned, but I think if he's down a little, you could see a slightly different temperament as time goes by. He's got the,
yes.
He doesn't like losing. There's no doubt about
that. No, he absolutely doesn't. But, and, you know, we saw him bowling over the past couple of days, and, you know, and you saw a little bit of, you know, he had a bit of a laugh on his face, but then once he gets hit for runs or, you know, the way he went out as well, his demeanour changed. So,
it does somewhat quickly. All right, so Dem Fanopoulos, our writer for The Roar. It's Thursday morning. They toss the coin. Australia win the toss. What would you do?
I think always bat first, especially Australia, get runs on the board. I think, you know, I mean, I haven't had too good a look at the conditions, and of course, 5 days out, you don't really know what's going to be produced. But Australia need to win the toss and bat first, only because when you look at our bowling attack, yes, it's very good, but also Mitch Stark has the ability to only bowl a few really good balls, and then you can sort of get after him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Josh Hazlewood is the key to Australia's bowling attack, you know, because we need that line and length. We need that person hitting the same area over and over again to make Mitch Stark more dangerous than he may otherwise be, and Pat Cummins. So I want to see Australia win the toss and bat first. I'd love to see Marcus Harris and Usman Khawaja, you know, just come out full of confidence and play their natural games, because that could mean Australia go at 3.5 and over or 4 and over early on, which is, you know, right on the front foot. And that's what that opening partnership gives to Australia. So I think that will be really good to watch.
And I think I'd rather see Lyon bowling on the last day than the Indian spinners, whoever they have in their team.
Absolutely. You know, especially if they go with two spinners and they're bowling on the last day, Australia's going to struggle to get more than 150, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Dem, thank you so much. We'll all have our eyes peeled as to what takes place in the test, and we'll be talking to you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
Good on you, mate. That's Dem Fanopoulos, our writer from theroar.com.au, knowing everything there is to know about cricket.